Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited for these two. If anything, it's going to be like the pre-conversation we had before recording. This is going to be so much fun. All right, Jennifer and Emily, can you take it away and let everyone know who you are and what you're about?
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Yay. I am Emily. That's Jen. I have worse vocal fry. That's how you know who is talking, and I'm too loud, and Jen is...
You'll be able to tell the difference between...
Jen is beautiful and perfect with her lovely voice. And we are the owners of the Westchester Therapy Group, the Philadelphia Therapy Group, and the host of the Shrink Tricks podcast. And we're super excited to be here.
So excited. Thank you so much for having us. We're really, really excited.
I'm excited to have you guys on. Like, it's going to be so much fun. I just love like your energy right now. Kind of like, why can't we just be in the room? You know, if I was on the East Coast and all of that.
Used to podcasting at this point.
It is like so sad though, right? Like, you know what I mean? If you think about like how much we can all get from each other's energy and like really like start to like pull it and thrive and grow from it. It has been so difficult, and it's so cool that we can still make all these virtual connections. But man, it sure as shit is not the same as a big old hug. And I love a bear hug, man.
It is way harder through Zoom. Even seeing clients, it's been a lot harder. Like, you don't get the same energy, same connection. But I do find clients are able to sometimes open up a little bit easier because they're in their houses.
Yeah. So we should probably say we're licensed marriage and family therapists.
Right. Got that part.
So so that's what we do. So, and that doesn't mean we necessarily only work with couples and families. We work a ton with individuals, but what it means is that all the work we do, we see within context. So we think about you and how you're handling situations at work, also how you handle situations with your family growing up and what your role was in your family and how that impacts everything now, because we believe that your past affects your present. So we think in a systems theory, but we work a ton with individuals and couples. Neither of us really work with families at this point.
But some of our clinicians do.
Yes, we have lots of good clinicians. But it's very hard. I mean, when you get more than one person in the room, right? Like, it's this whole other amazing dynamic and so much healing. Like, if you think about, like, if hurt can come from relationships, so can healing. So it is this unique thing to have these people together to watch people grow and heal. And, like, Jen and I say all the time, like, we think we have the best jobs in the world. Like, we're super fucking lucky.
Oh, yeah.
So why did you guys become therapists? Let's back that up before we get into why you guys.
We were both very fucked up.
Who isn't?
I think that's why most therapists really become therapists, is that they've had their own therapy. And I think Emily and I's stories are a little bit different, but both stem from the same thing, is that for me, you know, I've always, my parents, anytime I was upset about something, they had no idea how to handle it. So they were like, you got to go to therapy. So like, even at a young age, they were sending me to therapy because they really had no idea how to handle their own emotions, let alone mine. And so therapy was always something I became really comfortable with. And then, you know, I was always the friend that everyone went to. But as I got older and I was like really interested in psychology and therapy, my mother told me, you can't make any money in that. You have to go into business. So I was like, all right, mom, I'll listen to you. So I went into business. And it was the worst experience of my life, made a terrible decision, and then decided to go back to grad school, and it completely changed my life.
Everything. But I also think, Jen said we had sort of similar things. I went to school to be a teacher, started out in special education. Then I was like, I hate this. I just wanted to sit and hang out with the kids all day. I would like literally sit in the classroom and be like, so what the hell's going on in your family? And then I was like, I should be a therapist. But the other thing was, both Jen and I had super negative experience with other therapists. Both of us, which is the number one thing we hear from people. I went to this therapist before, they didn't get me, they didn't see me, and now I like now I'm so scared to go back to therapy again. So like, you know, we talk about this thing of like, go to therapy and it's so great. But if you've had a negative experience with a therapist, the same thing with a doctor, with a lawyer, right? Then it like gives the entire thing like a bad rep, right? How many negative things have you heard about lawyers?
Oh, a crap ton, right?
Same thing with therapists though, you know? So for both of us, I think it was like, you know what? We want to do this because we had had a feeling of showing up in a room and feeling so not seen. So our biggest thing is, how do we show up? How do we see people exactly how they are? And how do we not meet them with some psychobabble bullshit that makes them feel bad and alone?
Because we're
that's how we started.
And we're very much ourselves as therapists, right? Like, it's important. We focus on our clients. But we're like, the person that I am in the room with my clients is the same person I am outside of the room. And I think the thing that we've always struggled with when we've gone to our own therapist is that they didn't feel like real people. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of based our entire practice, our entire model of doing therapy off of that, off of like real being real people first and therapists second.
Yeah. One of the best things we learned, Lo, have you read Ash Ambridge's The Middle Finger Project yet?
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So highly recommend The Middle Finger Project. But one of my favorite things that Ash talks about is that you don't have to be impersonal to be professional. And I think for a lot of us, especially women, we're taught that you have to be impersonal to be professional. And so we don't believe in that. We believe that relationships heal, and that if you are yourself and you show up authentically, that you can create the life that you want to do. This is very hard, I think, especially for women. We are taught to show up a very specific way. I mean, I would imagine you have this all the time with being a lawyer, which is like, how do men show up in the room? How are you supposed to show up? And we were even told in grad school, what was the term they used, Jen?
They said neutralize yourself.
Neutralize yourself. Don't be too feminine. This is a field dominated by women, and we should not be too feminine.
Isn't that weird? And it was like, if you dyed your hair or wear color, like it was all about neutralizing yourself. And so,
and then I had pink hair.
And Emily came in with pink hair. But
I'm not doing that.
We very much didn't believe that, you know, and we were being taught by this kind of like old world way of doing therapy. And we find that, you know, people in this generation, they want to connect with someone who's being themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And so we come from a one down position where kind of an old world way of doing therapy was coming from a one up position where the therapist knows everything and they tell you how to live your life. We come from the perspective that you are the own expert of your life. Mm-hmm. We're just here to guide you. We're here to connect with you and be there for you. And so it's kind of our new wave way of doing therapy is to be yourselves and connect with you as ourselves.
Mm. Well, I think also this other part that there was this hidden part. Like it was almost this like gatekeeping of therapists, right? So like we're like where we would go and educate ourselves. This like old world, such a fucking Freud thing, that idiot.
Yeah, it is.
That douchebag. Can I say douchebag on your show?
Apparently we could say anything.
You can say anything. It's
like,
fine.
Which is like, he would like be thinking it through, but not tell you how he made connections, right? Mm. So the other big thing we do is like, we always say the best and most expensive therapy I ever got was going to grad school because we figured out how to learn to do it for ourselves, because the other belief is that I can't take my clients down a road I haven't gone before. So if I want my clients to be authentic, I better know how to be authentic myself. If I want my clients to have handled their family shit, I have to handle my family shit too. And that doesn't mean that you have to be perfect to be a therapist. It means you should be willing to do the work. And so the other thing we do is we teach our clients how we think. And that's one of the things that we've been able to do with the podcast and say, here's actually how we think through these dynamics. This is how a therapist would think. And if you can start to implement some of these, you can do some of your own self-healing. Mm. We don't have to gatekeep it. We don't have to be the only ones with this information. We shouldn't be. Everyone should have awareness and should be able to look at themselves in this way.
Because people, you know, I think that coming from that one-up position that we were originally taught is kind of operating under the assumption that clients can't do it for themselves, that we're the only ones who can help you. But that's not the case,
right? Fuck no.
we don't want our clients to be dependent on us. We want them to learn. We want them to grow and eventually say, listen, I don't really need you anymore. Like, I've taken everything, you know, and I've implemented it. That we want our clients to be able to implement this for themselves. And so teaching them how we think is helpful for them.
I think that's also really important, because when you're teaching someone to think, because that's pretty much what law school is teaching you how to think. The number one and number two answer we got from any question was, well, what does it depends and what do you think? And those are the most frustrating things in the world when you're like, just give me the goddamn answer right now. I don't want no, it depends and what do I think? I'm tired of thinking, like, I can't find the connection. But really, it brings that ownership into people's lives, which I'm a really big advocate of, because when you're making those connections and taking ownership of your life, you're able to make those shifts and feel like you're moving forward instead of feeling like you're stuck and looking for those outside resources all the time to, like, tell you what to do, what you should be doing next.
It gives you more control over your choices and your own life. And there's so much, especially right now, that we're out of control of.
Absolutely. Right?
And so I think a lot of the time we look outward to say, okay, how can I gain more control by controlling my environment in some way? And so what we do is kind of empower people to take control of what's happening internally so that they can function with what's going on externally, because there's so much that is out of our control.
Well, you really have to start to think about it as, like, we consider ourselves like trauma-informed clinicians, right? So if you grew up in an abusive situation, and I don't even just mean your home, right? Abuse can be from your church, right? So if you grew up thinking there's only one way to live your life and you listen to that, this happens all the time with people that are in, like, a very conservative and one way of living religious household, which is they then get out of it. They decide, oh, you know what? I really don't subscribe to that dominant narrative that was in my home, and fuck, but how do I think for myself now? And so that is incredibly difficult to say, well, I want to be myself, but how the hell do I start doing that? And we think it's something we should have developed really early. But the number one thing I say to my clients, and Lo, I'm going to use it on you. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Who was our first president of the United States?
George Washington.
George Washington. And who told you that information?
School.
School, history, right? And did you raise your hand at any point and say, like, can I see the proof of that?
Nope.
Fuck no, because why would you? You're like a kid, right? So, like, right. We don't do that shit. So at a very young age, we say to children, the world is good and your parents love you and believe what they say. But for a lot of us, that's actually not true in our households, right? Our parents are people. They are not perfect. They are not gurus. And so when we're growing up thinking that, then when bad shit starts to happen, it's like, wait a second, but the world's good and my parents are good, but bad happened. So is that me? Because we're only able to think in those black and white terms. So we get this idea of who to listen to. So what we want, especially for women, is how do you listen to your intuition and to yourself and grow that? Because that can give you contentment. We don't say happiness, because happiness is just an emotion.
Right. And I think too, that also applies to, like, our societal roles, right? This expectation that we should be following a certain path in some way. And I think people really struggle with this when, you know, let's say they decide that they're not going to get married, or that they're getting a divorce, or they're not going to have kids, that if you're not following this path that society says is expected of you, then that in itself can be really challenging. And we wonder, you know, what is wrong with us that we're not following this thing that we were taught is the right way. I'm using quotes, but no one can see me, is the right way to be living our lives. And that's another thing we really help clients with, is that you don't have to follow society's rules, right? You get to make up your own rules. Once again, giving yourself the autonomy in your life to make decisions based on what feels right for you, not what feels right for other people, not what society is telling you is right. And if you hear yourself saying to yourself consistently, oh, well, I should be doing this. We help you question those shoulds, because it's essential. Where did you get that idea that you should be doing this? Right? Because that usually makes us feel like shit, because most of the time it's not aligned with what we want for ourselves.
Definitely. And I think that's right. And I think it's really common if we look at women in their 20s and 30s, I should be married, I should be engaged, I should be having a child, right? And that can also set you up for so much comparison and grief, right? Okay. Because if you're not on that heteronormative timeline, then you're like wrong, or you're like losing in some way, but maybe you're killing it at your career, or maybe you're figuring some fucking shit out. You don't have to be successful all the goddamn time, but it can really set us up in terms for this quote unquote failure, which it's not. But if we're going by that timeline is so unrealistic, right? And it's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I have women that I work with that are like 25 years old that are worried that they're not like engaged because they want to be pregnant by 30. I'm like, why? You don't. As someone who had a child
around,
as someone who had a child very young, I had my daughter at 29. Don't do it. I mean, it's, you know, you get
and we should note for everyone, Emily's hiding in her closet.
I'm waiting for my daughter right now.
She is
hiding from my child because, you know, like, there was reasons why I had a daughter, medical reasons I had a daughter, like, younger, like in my 20s. But like, people get so obsessed, like, oh, I want to have a kid by 30, or I want to do this, or I want to be done having kids. My mother had me at 43 years old, and I'm perfect.
Perfect.
So I want you to like question those things. If you're listening and you feel like I'm behind or I'm wrong, you're not. You're perfect showing up where you are. And if you want to be somewhere different, you can always do that as well. But fuck other people's timelines. But it's hard, right? Because then we get into this whole biological clock thing and all these other things we put on ourselves, which can really fuck us up.
And I think social media plays such a part in that too. So easy to compare ourselves when we're seeing these pictures of people and how happy they are, and they have a child, and then they're both smiling, right? But like, that,
which is why I always put bad pictures on my social media of me and my child.
True. Emily sent me a picture yesterday. She was like, we just went to the creek, and it was a picture of her in the front and her daughter in the back, and they both looked miserable.
We were.
There she was like, it's so fucking hot out. I'm dying.
So hot. She had a breakdown. The other kids are pushing her. Like, it was fucking chaos.
It speaks to the fact that, like, everyone really posts their highlights, what they want everyone else to see. And so when you're scrolling through social media and you find yourself comparing yourself to other people and saying, oh, why aren't I hanging out with this many friends? Or like, why don't I have this group? Or why aren't I at this stage in my life? You have to be conscious of the fact that people are only posting their highlights, right? No one is posting, except for Emily, no one is posting the things that they're struggling with. And so to be really conscious of that while you're scrolling through social media, and if you recognize that you're not able to be conscious of it and you're constantly comparing and it's wearing you down, get the fuck off social media.
Take a break. Yeah. It is crazy. And none of the stuff we're saying is new, right? Like, this is shit you hear all the time, right? Like, mute, unfollow, whatever. But it's so wild that we can hear it a million times and still be like, God, that girl's kitchen looks really nice. Or like, how much money does she make? And I think it does lean into this idea of imposter syndrome, which, one, happens way more in women. It happens more women. It happens for highly educated, intelligent women. And Jen and I have it literally all the time.
Constantly.
We have a very successful business. It does very well. We look like we have it made. You know, our podcast is very well. We get no money from that. it all looks amazing from the outside, but even those people, and like, the other part of this is how we use busy as a badge of honor, right? This ongoing thing. And we're guilty of this too, because we're involved in a lot of stuff. And it's never, the grass is always greener, man. That shit, always. That's true.
That is a true statement.
In law school, I really understood like why so many lawyers played really hard, or why there's so much substance abuse issues going on in the legal community, just because it's like hustle all the goddamn time. Like, I got burnt out on that. Like, I graduated when when I was 25, and I call that like my literal quarter life crisis, because everything just kind of like blew up in my life. Just like all of that being beaten down, and like, you know, your value isn't in a number, but yet it's still in a number, like with ranking and all of that. And I'm just like, this is a total mind fuck. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Especially if you're getting those advanced degrees, right? So you go to school for 12 years and they're like, all right, well now I'll do these other 4 years of undergrad. Okay. Well now I'm going to do these other 4 years of law school, like whatever. Like you can add that. You're like, what do I do now? Who's going to tell me what's next? I followed the rules. What about me? And like, this is something that was like my biggest issue. I'm such a rule follower. I do like everything right. Like Jen knows me. I'm like our ethical background. She's like, is this an ethical issue? I'm like, let me tell you. Yeah. Because I am anal and a people pleaser. But you get to the end of it. You're like, what the fuck do I do now? And that can really throw us for a loop. Mm-hmm. It can make us feel, and that's, I think, when imposter syndrome comes, right? Well, I have the law degree. I got the job. I got the internship. But now I have no idea what I'm doing. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I don't feel like that on the inside. I still feel like I'm 20 and scared.
Well, and it also takes like, you know, even though you get the degree, it takes like being in the field, I think, for a long time until you really feel confident. Like you hear this in like nurses and doctors too, unfortunately, you know, that because there's so much that can happen with the human body. Same with us. There's so much that can happen with the human mind. And I'm sure for lawyers, I can't imagine, you guys read so much paperwork. Like my dad's a lawyer. I see the things he reads and I'm like, oh my God. That looks horrible. But I think that there's so much experience and it takes so much time to really feel confident. And even when you get that experience, there's still times where you're like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing here, right? That like, that's part of being human. That, and it's okay to have that question. And I think that we look at people from our outside perspective, we look at other people and say, oh my God, they're so confident. They know exactly what they're doing. They have it all together. And so that's why like our podcast, this podcast is so important, that people know that other people feel the same way. Like not people always, there will always be times where you're insecure, where you're struggling. Unless you're a narcissist, you might feel like you're the greatest in the whole world. And
but
you're
never saying it's still not good enough. Like even narcissists who seem like it, it's because they're trying
But they'll never admit it.
No, never.
Yeah, right. So total segue. But yeah, to know that everyone feels like this sometimes, everyone struggles with their security, and feeling like they know what they're doing, right? That's kind of just part of being human.
That's how the name of the podcast came, because I mean, I've been manifesting this for like 2 years before I eventually did it. I just didn't know what I was talking about. And about 6 months prior, I was doing some volunteer coaching and everyone kept coming up to me and they'd hear little snippets about me just picking up and moving halfway across the country and just other things. And they'd be like, you're so brave. Internally, I'd be like looking around. I'm like, who the fuck are you talking to? Because right now I'm a goddamn mess. There ain't no bravery going on in here. I want to hide under the blanket right now. Like, what are you talking about? And then it just manifests or built into this. I'm like, well, everyone's brave. It's just society like piled things on. Like when you're little, like learning how to walk and do and roll over and all of that, there's nothing that's brave.
Absolutely.
And new things.
Absolutely. And I think that people think about bravery as like, you're confident in your decision and you're going for it. Where bravery is about doing something and struggling through it and admitting that you're struggling and saying it's okay to struggle.
That vulnerability.
That vulnerability is bravery, to be able to do something, admit you're struggling through it and doing it anyway. Like that's a really hard thing to do.
And I think that's why we live, like we like get off on like, you know, when celebrities come out, like I fucked up. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, like, yes, you did.
We love when people admit their fuck ups, right? Like we like
thrive. Because we connect with it.
Yes, exactly. Because it's like, man, I fuck up all the time, especially in a day and age, especially like for white women right now with doing our anti-racism work. We're making so many mistakes.
Yes.
All the time. And still, you keep showing up and you keep going and you keep making mistakes. And that's fucking what bravery is.
And to be able to say, like, yeah, I totally made a mistake. I'm going to learn from that. I'm going to work on that to be able to acknowledge that you're human, you make mistakes, it's okay. How do we work through it? How do we work and do something differently? And so, but to really recognize, because for some reason we see other people as they're perfect and I'm not. Mm-hmm. Right? Like other people have it all together and I don't, right? In that comparison. And that really hurts us because we feel so isolated in what we're going through when really everyone is struggling with something. Even if they're putting on this air of confidence, they're struggling with something. We don't know what it is. We know what it is if there are clients, but other people, we don't know what it is. And you know what? But just to keep that in mind, even though you see these people who are kind of projecting confidence, they're also struggling in different ways.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jen and I have been able to, when we talk about this idea of relationships, when Jen and I got together, when we became work wives, I literally say all the time, I'm like, if my husband was like, pick me or Jen, I'd be like, well, it was really nice knowing you. I would like shared custody and I'm picking Jen. Because when you have a relationship in your life where that person gets you, maybe, and it doesn't have to be right. And we also have this emphasis on romantic relationships, mm-hmm. right? Especially for women, like, oh, you got to meet your best friend. Fuck that, man. I'm about platonic relationships. I am about friendships. I think that shit is on the same exact tier as romantic relationships. We as a society has made like romantic relationships these really amazing things. Friendships is where it's at, dude. And so one of the things is that Jen and I's relationship and our business works so well because we have each other to be super embarrassing with. Like we have each other to be like, hey, I really fucked up this case today. Or I like completely, okay, like this week I double booked like multiple clients. Like I just fucked up. I got confused. My nanny's on vacation this week. I need her also. If I had to pick between my nanny and my husband, I would pick her.
Your house is getting the boot real quick.
Yeah. So like
I'm getting real low on the totem pole.
Because I like believe in community. Like I believe that you just need extra people around in your life. And so this week, right, I made a bunch of mistakes. I had to like tell clients, like, I really fucked up my schedule, man. I'm so sorry. Like you got double booked and like here's what I'm gonna do. And we're so imperfect, all of us are. So having someone like Jen, my work partner, to be very honest, unauthentic, and her being like, yeah, I do that all the time. That's when like that vulnerability makes so much sense. When someone can be like, dude, me too. You're like, oh my God. Right. It just gets rid of shame.
Totally. And we're very lucky in that for the most part, we switch off weeks when we're both struggling, right? Like
depressed 1 week and you're depressed the next.
Exactly. So we're really lucky that we kind of balance each other out in that way, because when Emily's feeling depressed, she's struggling with something and she comes and talks to me about it, I can be there for her and vice versa. And I think, you know, over the years, because we're both therapists and because we've built an incredible relationship, friendship, and through business, we feel very safe with each other to be able to discuss those things. We're not each other's therapists, but we just feel like we can connect with each other and know that we're both going through something, right? And we can both struggle, and it's okay for us both to struggle.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Like people, you know, there's this talk about having a safe space and all of that. I think we're never going to have a safe space in the world. There's going to be people who think differently or get offended differently. Like I had this conversation with my dad, the nicest person on the planet, somebody could be offended by them call them fake or whatever. And I think it's really what you guys discussed is having like one or two people who you feel safe enough with to be like, mm-hmm. I'm going to fuck up here. Please don't judge me. Just let me fuck up so I can figure this shit out, so I can go out instead of being in the real world, we'll just say, and being like, okay, I need this type of validation, so please agree with me with what I'm saying and don't judge me. And if I fuck up, please don't judge me. And I'm like, that's not possible. You can't do that.
Right.
Brené Brown talks about, so Brené Brown, of course, I'm not even gonna be like, here's what she does. Everyone fucking knows who Brené Brown is. If you don't, I don't know what to say. Call me, because I'd actually like to meet you, because you'd be living under a rock. you say I'm cool. Have you been off the grid? Can I come? So Brené Brown talks about, I think it's in The Gifts of Imperfection. In her pocket, she keeps a list that she has four names written on. The four people in her life that no matter how badly she fucked up, they would still love her. You only need one. You need two. You don't, we have this idea you need all these people in your life. If you can have one to two people that will love you no matter what, you're pretty fucking lucky. Right? And so, and what to remind yourself is no matter how badly I fuck up, Jen is going to love me.
Always.
Yes. Right. Like, and that's not a romantic relationship. That's a friendship, which I believe are just as important as romantic relationships. But when you're in your 20s and your 30s, you're so obsessed with finding the romantic relationship and it takes away from the beauty of the other relationships in your life.
And you know what? We were just talking about this because we need to do a podcast episode on friendships. And there's a lot of literature and talk about how to build on your romantic relationships and what that looks like. But there really isn't a ton on friendships, and losing a friendship.
Oh, heartbreaking.
Oh my God. So it fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's worse than like a romantic relationship. Yeah, oh my God. Because it's all emotion. It's
yes.
You don't mix the sexual in it. It's just yes. Your emotion. And you're just like, fuck, okay, yes. I can handle this maybe.
And we don't talk about it for some reason. Like it feels, and everyone goes through it. Like even as we're saying it now, like the three of us are like, oh my God, it's horrible. It hurts so bad. It's like going through a breakup and no one really talks about it. And also talking about the transitions that happen in your life. And how that can push friendships to grow apart. And that can be really, yeah. really hard. That is sometimes a natural progression of those relationships, but no one talks about it. And so it's so essential to discuss that. And going back to what you were saying about Brené Brown is that you're going to have certain friendships where you can go to them and say, I fucked up, you know, don't judge me. And kind of have that unconditional love for one another. And then you're going to have the friends who maybe will judge you, mm-hmm. who will talk about you behind your back, who there will be those friendships that don't feel as safe. And so it's okay to decide who you're talking to in those really vulnerable moments.
And for you, what's the difference between privacy and secrecy?
Right. Right.
Have privacy without secrecy. Mm-hmm.
And so, right. And so how can you boundary off those relationships that are going to feel really healthy and maybe the ones that aren't as healthy, the ones where you can't go to bring your shame and say, this is kind of what happened to me right now. And so you're allowed to kind of separate those out for yourself.
Mm. So many good points in that.
I have no idea how we got on that topic.
It's just very interesting because one of my notes I put, I'm like, I had a listener come and, you know, get someone on to talk about like growth in a relationship, like when you outgrow or feel like that relationship is dead, and navigate how that looks like. Cause I remember, I believe it was you, Emily, who was talking about you were in a relationship and one of the first, when you're in grad school and starting, one of the first things they said, like, there was going to be a bunch of breakups and divorces because your growth. So you could share a little bit about that, but also how would someone to like navigate that in a relationship that is not necessarily romantic, cause this was a romantic partnership they were talking about, but also in like friendships is navigating and being like, okay, I've outgrown mm-hmm. going through that pain and working to the other side of that.
So yeah. So what you're talking about is for the background, our first week of grad school, they straight up said to us, if you are in a romantic relationship, 50% of you end up broken up in divorce. And it was, I think it was probably 70%. I mean, nice. Almost everyone. I was not one of them. But my relationship with my best friend did end. So Jen broke up with her boyfriend.
And I did.
I was a fucking dud, though.
That was a good choice.
He was a really nice guy, but he
really
just, like,
nice, but
yeah,
wasn't the right fit.
And he wasn't doing the work, right? So like you were going deeper and growing, and like some people are wonderful, nice people, but like once you start doing a certain amount of work, you outgrow people really fast. And if they're not doing it at the same level, like that's it, man.
You start to and you start to realize things that you did not realize before. Mm-hmm. Like you start to recognize that maybe certain friendships or certain relationships are more one-sided. Uh-huh. You know, when we start to learn about boundaries in grad school and you start to learn about what a healthy relationship really looks like, you really look at your relationships really differently. You look at your family really differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You start to give your family an insane amount of therapy when you're at family dinners, which is just, is probably not the healthiest.
No, yeah.
But it's true. It's like when you're going deeper and you're doing deeper work, there's a different level of connection that you can have with other people who are also doing that work. And I think that lends itself to Emily and I's relationship too, is that when we have conversations about our relationship, like it's always deeper. We're always like checking ourselves in different ways. We were like, oh, do you think we're triangulating that person into our relationship? Like no one really talks like that. Right?
No, it's very annoying.
Right. But, and so you can't have that conversation with someone else who doesn't understand that, who's not doing the work. And so it doesn't. It changes your relationships a ton.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting, right? So if we talk about these two relationships that we both ended in grad school, Jen, yours was like a fizzle, like a slow fade.
Yeah.
Like mine was a blow up.
Mm. Yes.
Mine was like light. The relationship, literally my best friend for a very long time, him and I had a massive falling out, and bad. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, like years, there was a time you think about, like when you go through a breakup, you think about like how often you think about that person. When you end a friendship, you think about that person all the fucking time.
Yeah.
I mean, the shit you did together, like it is so different, especially if there's mutual friends and all this other shit associated with it. And so I think it's hard. And I think unfortunately in our society, we give a lot of space for grieving a romantic relationship and not a lot of space for grieving friendships, but it is honestly just as painful, if not more painful. And so when you've hit something where you think, oh my God, this person's not doing the work, this is not a healthy relationship for me. Like, so Jen, for you, it's just like, this isn't the right person. For mine, it was like, oh, this is so toxic.
Yeah. I knew mine wasn't the right person. It just,
yeah, he's such a nice guy, but yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. Mine was like, oh, this is like a toxic friendship. Yes. This is so.
That was like highlighting that for you. It sounds like it was like highlighting things that you didn't necessarily see before.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right?
That it was like more one-sided, that it was toxic.
So it's so hard, right? So like there's this part of saying to yourself, what am I going to lose and what am I going to gain by ending something? And that's what you have to remember, is that if you keep something on for comfort, you're also, it's keeping other things out of your life. Mm-hmm. So if I did not end my friendship with this person, one, I don't think I'd be married now. I don't think I'd have a child. I think that they were getting in the way of my romantic relationship because of some other shit that was going on. And so I had to let go of that relationship and grieve it and be very sad and heartbroken for other things to come. And I think for some of us, we're so comfortable in a certain level of chaos that it's so easy to like be pulled towards that toxicity of it, especially if you grew up in a chaotic home, that healthy things that are stable seem very unsexy.
Totally.
Like, right, like chaos. Like
that's boring.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Chaos. This is why it's why we sort of romanticize abuse, right? Because there's like this level of like toxicity and chaos with it that feels like passion, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like when someone's like really jealous in some way, you're like, oh, they must really love me.
Like, no. Yeah, no, they're sick.
They've got some insecurity there.
Yeah, that's not love.
But I think it's interpreted like that, where like,
well, I think from a really young ages, women, I mean, it starts out this idea of what guy hits you on the playground, they like you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck is that, right? If someone hits my kid, I'm like, he doesn't fucking like you, and that dude sucks. Like,
protect yourself.
Right? But from a really, really young age, we do the same. Well, they're jealous of you. We have to stop telling people that. Mm-hmm. It is not jealousy. It's not. It's cruelty. It's abuse.
Right. Right.
And you're right. So we have this romanticized idea of it, which makes it really hard for us to get out of really unhealthy situations. And sometimes they're not unhealthy. Sometimes we just simply outgrow them. Mm-hmm. And then we feel like assholes because we're like, but he's really nice to me. As if our bar is that low,
right,
for relationships. Well, he doesn't hit me. I can't tell you the amount of women I work with that are so unhappy in their marriages, but they're like, but he's a nice guy. I'm like, I don't fucking care. I'm sure he is. Like,
right. Like there's a reason why you're talking about it. There's a reason why it's wearing on you. And you know, it reminds me of that quote, and I hate to whip out a quote right now, but like, if you avoid conflict to keep the peace, you start a war within yourself.
Oh,
right? Because like, even though, you know, if you're in any sort of friendship that feels toxic to you, but there's a fear of ending it or there's a fear of changing it, it's still haunting you, right? Like without you doing anything about it, like you're thinking about it all the time mm-hmm. and it's taking up so much space for you without you doing anything about it. So yeah, to ask yourself, like, what are the consequences of doing something? And then what do I feel like the consequences of not doing something? If I don't do something, what's this going to look like? How yeah. is it going to take up space in my brain for the rest of time? Well, how is it going to affect my relationships?
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't, and I know I'm just going to keep giving book recommendations, but Glennon Doyle talks about it, Untamed.
I love that book.
Avoidance is a peacekeeper, but honesty is a peacemaker. Mm-hmm. And if you have two avoidant people in a relationship, it might keep the peace and it might last for fucking forever, but it does not make peace within yourself. It does not actually stay. But it really does some phenomenal avoidance. I mean, avoidance is, I mean, I'm pretty skilled at it.
Avoidance is fun.
My favorite with taxes, with budgeting.
Procrastination all the way.
Mm-hmm. Saying no to people. You know, there's tons of fun things that we can avoid, but it's never typically good for us, right? And it goes into this idea that, like, we have now, it has been such a capitalistic idea of self-care. Like, self-care has turned into face masks and pedicures, and that's not what self-care is.
Right.
Often self-care is doing really uncomfortable things that lead to inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
That don't look pretty on Instagram.
Right. They don't look pretty. They don't feel pretty. You don't want to do that. Like,
and they're really, right, they're really uncomfortable. Like mm-hmm. having to have some of those conversations is really, really uncomfortable. But have you ever, you know, been afraid of a conversation and then you have it and afterwards there's this huge relief,
mm-hmm.
right? Like there's, because you've been thinking about it for so long. When I quit my first job, when I lived in New York, I was 22, 23, and I had been thinking about it forever. And then I quit. I never quit a job before. So then I quit and I cried hysterically. I just couldn't hold it in. It was just such a release for me and such a relief. I had just been thinking about it for so mm-hmm. long. And I'm like, it totally was probably not appropriate at the time.
They're like, wow, this girl really.
They're like, you can go, like, please.
But right. Well, I mean, it talks about how much difficult and uncomfortable things lead to growth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is the hardest part of being human, is sitting in distress and sitting in discomfort and breathing through it and saying, like, I'll still survive on the other side of this.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really big reminder, because, like, you both, I enjoy avoiding. I'm not a conflict person who seeks out conflict, but if it's like has to be done, all right, I'll fucking do it. I'm not gonna like it, but let's not, I don't want to. And now as I grow and learn, I'm like, okay, I gotta have those conversations early on, because if I don't, there's going to be a blow up. Let's back up and avoid the blow up and see if we can repair things, or it could just be a amicable, like, okay, this is how it is, like moving on, like having those tough conversations, or what I call clearing conversations, and coach so many people on, and being like, it's not actually about them, it's about you. Yeah. Just to say whatever you need to say so you can move the fuck on. Otherwise you're going to be spinning your wheels on it forever.
Yeah. And even in like smaller amounts, right? In any sort of relationship, in terms of setting like small boundaries for yourself. Like, I had a friend who called me yesterday, and I had so many clients, and I texted her and said, listen, I don't think I can talk this week. I am like completely burnt out. I've been doing Zoom sessions and I won't be able to function. But a lot of the times we even avoid saying those small things. We just won't call them back. I mean, I would have done that in the past. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I should probably say something. Yeah. But then it builds and builds and builds until you get to the point where you're like, this person needs too much for me, right? Yes. Like, I need to cut them off. So
yes, right. Yeah, they're draining me.
The smaller boundary setting, like in those moments, to be able to say like, hey, I love you, I miss you, but this is what I need right now, and I will call you when I have some time.
So 2 weeks ago, my mom said to me, this is so embarrassing to say, 2 weeks ago, my mom said, Emily, every time you say, I feel bad, that's your red flag. Because that's when you know it's too much. If you're like, oh God, I'm really exhausted, I don't want to do this thing, but I feel bad. That's probably a really good indicator that it's not a good reason to do it.
Right.
This is a big problem I have all the time of saying yes to stuff that I should say no to. It's like, well, I feel bad. You know, they've been looking forward to this and I feel bad canceling the plan. That has to be an indicator. If that's the only reason you're doing it, then it's actually worth it to feel bad.
Oh, yeah. And that's what happens when your mom's a therapist. Yes. And those are the types of conversations you have with your mom when they're a therapist. Right? Like, whose mom ever could say that?
My mother, who then will also listen to every episode of Shrink Chicks and will tell me. Is it nice?
I don't know. She said some nice things before.
About you? Me, she's like, just so you know, the word is verse, not verses. I'm like, okay.
Okay, mom.
She's still a mom, you know?
True. You're not a reflection of her, of course.
Oh, gotta love parents when they pick up on those things all the time.
Right. How do they know? How do they know? Unbelievable. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask my dad sometimes. I think I asked him a question that was, you know, very like getting some feedback about like that he was talking about my siblings about their each like little niche that's kind of like the not so great side, so like the negative side, and I'd be like, all right, he hasn't said me, okay, dad. And I asked and I sat there and I'm like, yeah, he is spot on. And I needed to hear that. Like, I needed to put my own self in that place. But he's also the one that would say that too. Like, he hasn't listened to the podcast, but he would nitpick those things. And I'd be like, yes, Jesus fucking Christ, dad. Right. Okay.
Always. And right. I feel like that's all parents. They just go into like the nitpicking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you listen, and then you become a therapist, and then you do lots of family therapy on everyone, so that everyone's scared to nitpick you. And you turn it on them, and you say, "This clearly is something that's going on with you."
Gosh, oh my gosh! I feel like we could have hours and hours, hours of just conversations about this, and like every like many different things. We hit most of the topics that I've had on there, but before we go into my final questions, what is like your number one like guilty pleasure?
Oof, reality TV.
I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I believe pleasure is pleasure.
She would. She totally would.
I don't think that we should have any guilt about pleasure. Okay, but if I'm gonna answer the question,
you first had to say that because that is important to say.
Yes. My number one, Jen, what would it be for me?
I'm thinking, hold on.
Because I don't watch TV. Funny.
So TikTok?
Oh, it's TikTok. I fucking love TikTok, which is so funny, right? So like somehow recently we've had like a ton of people from The Bachelor on our podcast. I've never seen a single episode of The Bachelor. So it's so funny when we're talking to them because I have no idea what we're talking about. I'm like... Jen knows everything, and I'm just like, hey, like I'm here showing up for the party. I don't watch television, so I would say TikTok. I fucking love TikTok. I don't make them. I made two, and they were pretty bad. But
I thought your TikToks were phenomenal.
Thank you. I made two. I just look at everyone's. I love social media. I love scrolling. I like mindless shit. But I would say, okay, no, my guilty pleasure is actually this. So now my daughter is starting to talk. She's 18 months old. I like make this like this little girl parrot. Like I'm like, what does a sheep say? Like my guilty pleasure is like harassing my child. That's what it is. Then I'm like, tell Aunt Jen what a cow says. Like that is what my guilty
pleasure. And that's when it's so highlighted how different our lives are now.
I love it. It's diversity and it's like best in a relationship. Things that you don't think would go together and work well, they do.
Yeah. Flo, what is your guilty pleasure?
Oh, God, yeah. What's yours?
It's reality TV.
Like, oh, my God. What's your favorite show? Maybe
I love Housewives, and I recently just got on like Selling on Sunset because it's just like 30 minutes, really short, quick, easy.
I've heard that that's really good. That's Netflix, right?
Yep, that's Netflix. So it's just one of those things because, you know, I'm so high functioning in like the learning and always learning, and then also like self-reflecting on how I can, you know, be better, what's the saying to me, or like all of that. And sometimes your brain gets on overload, and you know, some people want to watch some cheesy romantic movie on Netflix or whatever, and I'm like, just give me the goddamn drama of someone else's life and not my own, so I can just sit here and maybe silently judge and be jealous of some of the things they're doing, and then it's like giving my brain a break, and I can be like, okay, I can move on now.
Have you watched the show Dating Around on Netflix?
No, I have not watched the show Dating Around.
It's like reality TV. It pretty much just shows one person, like every episode is one person going on five different first dates.
Wow.
It is so interesting because also I think it's really good for people who are dating and like feel rejection very easily in those moments because you recognize that like it's the same person going on dates with five different people. You see them connecting with certain people and not connecting with other people. Like I've seen one where she like gets in a fight with the guy.
Do you see them acting differently on each date? Like are they?
Another thing, they're told to wear the same exact thing on every single date. So it's actually the way it's directed, I think is so good too, because they switch off between the dates in every single, like, and they do the same thing in every date. So they'll have drinks and then they'll have dinner and then they'll go to like an after spot. And there's certain times where like they will take the dates into the cab going home. And there's certain times where they send them home. And it's just really interesting to see how, and then they have a conversation about how they think the date is going.
Okay.
It's really interesting. I would highly recommend.
You might have sold me on that one.
I'm telling you, I think it's very,
I might be sold on Dating Around. I might, if I was going to watch TV, I think I would like that.
You should check it out. You really should, because I think it's just, and like just observing awkward conversations is another part of this guilty pleasure. So,
all right. Okay. I'm down with it, man.
Enjoy, everyone.
Dating around. Okay. Talking about guilty pleasures and all on that. We'll just leave it there. We won't even get to the final question. Just kidding. Where can everyone find you? And please don't give your address.
No, God, that will not.
Go up at our house in for a party. Make sure you wear a mask.
So on Instagram, you can find our therapy practice is at WC Therapy Group. Our podcast is at Shrink Chicks. If you want to make an appointment with one of our wonderful clinicians, you can fill out a contact form on wctherapygroup.com. They're taking virtual clients right now, so feel free to reach out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're just so happy to be here. So, and now you'll have us kicked. You can put up our stuff on your Insta and social. We can't wait to promote this across ours. Lo, thank you for having us today. This was a blast.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. I have two more questions before
we
go.
Oh, you do? Oh my God. Yes.
I'm like, do we think it's over yet? No, it's not. It is 100% over. Okay. So what you would say is your bravest moment?
Oh God. Good question. I have mine.
Oh, is it this? Okay. What's yours?
Wait, why did you think mine?
I thought we had the same one, but now I feel like we don't.
Well, what's yours? We might.
Jen and I had to have a really uncomfortable conversation with someone in our lives that was scary and horrifying and led to the most growth our business has ever had.
And I have to say that was a huge one.
Your number one.
You started the conversation off.
Oh. Yeah.
So I'm gonna, it was really tough.
You'll let me take that bravest moment.
Mine was going to be just starting the podcast.
That was really hard for you. That was easy for me.
Oh yeah. See, I'm very introverted.
Yeah, the podcast is nothing for me. This is the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Like talking about myself being on the podcast is a very difficult experience.
Yeah, you're so introverted.
But yeah, Emily, now that you bring that up, that was really fucking hard too.
Yeah, that was really hard. But no, but that makes a ton of sense, right? So like for me, direct confrontation and staying calm, cool, and collected, because there was already so many boundary violations I felt with this person before, and I was already feeling reactive. So like keeping my cool, which I didn't do completely, but you know, we're all growing. That was hard. But no, the podcast makes sense for you, Jen. For me, the podcast is like... I could take a shit and do it. Like talking about myself and like talking out loud is very easy.
So easy. Not for me. So yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
All right. And my final question is, what is your definition of brave?
Oof. And I think alluded to it earlier, mm-hmm. is that I think it's being able to be your most authentic, vulnerable self, taking your inward and presenting it outward and kind of showing people, this is who I am. That would be my definition of bravery.
Mine is fucking up and showing up.
There you go.
Fucking up is still showing up every time.
I'm going to add that to my arsenal. Fucking yes, for that, showing up. I love
that,
it.
That I would say is my definition of brave.
All right. Well, Jen and Emily, thank you so much for coming on. I love this conversation so much.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.